This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Real Estate Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also realtors with Oakwin Realty in downtown Vancouver. So excited for today. We've got Manveer Tagger. He is the project manager and partner at Common Ground Consulting. This is a unique take on the market and really excited about this.
Yeah, I feel like he's just in a different kind of area of real estate in a way that is really interesting for the show.
So this is the thing about Common Ground. For people that don't know the firm, they do everything from due diligence, feasibility studies, to rezoning, land development applications, project management. They work with municipalities on behalf of developers. So they're basically at all levels of the development process. So they see it all. Like from soup to nuts.
Yeah, they see it all. So when you ask, how's the market? I mean, he's like, I can take that from nine angles that you don't usually think about the market. And here's how I'm seeing it. So it's really interesting that way. His perspective is really interesting. I think the gap these guys have found in the market to create Common Ground is really interesting and exciting and kind of like, what's the word? Noteworthy. It's like, man, good on you for doing this. I feel like there's a million different ways he could have went, and this is probably the most challenging, but probably most rewarding way to go. And last, lots on the valley.
Yeah, tons on the valley. I feel like it's always nice to understand a little bit better about what's going on in the Fraser Valley because it is a different beast compared to Vancouver, Burnaby, like where we're talking about North Vancouver.
Totally.
The areas we're covering on a regular basis here. Lots of great insight into the valley, talking about the direction of the market. Some interesting comments on Langley and the future of the Fraser Valley.
Some interesting comments on up-and-coming areas as well.
Yes.
Specifically how you can tell who somebody hangs around with by what they think is up-and-coming.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, there's so many takeaways. Super excited to have Manveer on the program. Before we get to our conversation with him, though, let's talk about the MLA Newswire Weekly, because we've got a headline.
Yeah, that's right. The MLA Newswire Weekly, a pre-sale update brought to you by MLA Canada. And the headline this week, Adam, is Innovations in Kitchen Island Functionality. Now, everyone calm down.
calm down. It's not a breaking news.
It is very interesting. And here's the thing. This takes me back to when Ryan Lalonde and Cameron McNeil were on the show.
Right.
And Cameron, I think, made the case for why buying pre-construction is more valuable than resale. And it's because it's forward-looking.
Forward-thinking.
And here's the thing. So developers right now are really looking at smaller living spaces overall. And that's
big demand. Big demand for smaller living spaces. People are living in smaller spaces.
And they're trying to maximize functionality and efficiency. And increasingly, they're eliminating dedicated dining spaces to free up room for expanded living areas or additional den, flex, bedroom spaces. And one of the ways they're doing this is around the changing ideas of kitchen islands.
Yeah. Yeah, the idea essentially, and this has been, you've been noticing, if you've been going to development sales centers over the years and watching how things are changing, huge emphasis on the kitchen island. And essentially what's happening is developers, because of the limited space, are replacing dining areas, designated dining areas, especially in the more compact, like smaller square footage units, with kitchen islands. And the idea is that, people will eat at the kitchen island or they'll have a dinner party around the kitchen island. So there'll be like seating around the perimeter.
Right.
Which is actually, when we built our house, we did something very similar with the Kitchen Island.
You built like a kitchen island.
Well, we built a kitchen island.
That's right.
We
did
that. And I got to say,
it's the focal point of your house.
It is the focal point of my house, but I guess of at least the kitchen, but everything gravitates to the kitchen, like every good party. And you always end up around the island and it's pretty great.
Yeah. And this is the way. So there's a couple different ways islands are being used, right?
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. If you're actually buying, and I think this is the point, is that what a lot of developments that we've been in recently, what they're doing is they're adding, if they aren't doing an island in the unit, which is great with the perimeter seating,
right?
They're adding it as an upgrade. So like imagine like an L-shaped kitchen where you have kind of the L-shape of the appliances, and then there's an area there that's often like kind of a dead spot where you could add an upgraded island, which could have seating, like maybe two seats on one side and an overhang, which could be a great way to kind of complete the kitchen. So a lot of developers will actually add that as an upgrade. The other thing that they're doing, which is really great, is if you have a U-shaped kitchen, they're putting one side of the U-shaped kitchen, they're expanding as like with an overhang or a larger space that kind of operates as an island. But the big news story here is that islands are here to stay. And as we get more compact with our space, we're going to see the island become the center point of kind of the kitchen and dining area.
As a final point here, I think what this says to me more than anything is, you know, you can have a poorly laid out 700 square feet, or you can have an efficient and effective 480 square feet that's actually just a better living experience. And this is what we're talking about here, right?
Yeah.
It's all about maximizing that functionality and efficiency. If you liked what you heard here, subscribe to the MLA Newswire, a daily email roundup of the latest real estate news and market insights. Visit MLACanada.com to subscribe today.
Yeah. And on that, in terms of one of the requests that we have had from people is to have more design focused people on the show. We've had that request a few times, kind of talking about where design's coming from. So since we've had so much feedback about people wanting to have more designers on the show, we've actually contacted Maxime from Marcon, who's going to be making an appearance, talking about kind of the direction of design and what's happening with new projects. I'm actually super excited.
I'm very excited specifically because I just was through Soane House. You were there. Soane House, Marcon's newest project in West Coquitlam. The design is off the charts.
Yeah.
I've also been told Maxime is a very good conversationalist.
Right.
So I'm excited about that. What else do we have before we cut, Adam? We have, well, the show is sponsored, as always, by Scalina Real Estate.
Yes, Scalina Real Estate, which is our company in Vancouver. Lots of new listings that are being featured at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. We've got a ton of new listings that are coming in the next couple of weeks here. Really excited. Matt, we've got a listing you want to talk about.
You know what? I just wanted to highlight 107503 West 16th because this is almost 1,500 square feet.
Right.
Right at 16th and Canby. I feel like this is, as we say, it's literally defined center ice. Three bedrooms. They don't make them like this anymore. This is like you're living in a ranch.
Sky bungalow.
Yeah, it's like a rancher, the Sky Rancher almost, except it's literally ground floor, which is nice because there's A, security, and B, there's really, really nice outdoor space.
Yeah.
This is literally, you like bocce ball? You got room for bocce ball. 107503.
That's the opening question. I led.
Do you like bocce ball? I always lead with a question. It really draws people in. 107503 West 16th. You can see it at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com where we're featuring all our listings. And while you're there, click sell with us, Adam, because that's where you can download our most downloaded PDF, the sold plan.
Yeah, this is a direct download. It is a step-by-step guide for getting top dollar in the shortest amount of time. If you're thinking about listing your home, or if you just want evergreen content for when you're ready to list, have that step-by-step guide. It's going to walk you through getting your home ready for market. Matt, without further ado, this conversation with Manveer is fantastic. I can't wait for this one. It was great having him in studio.
Absolutely. Enjoy our talk with Manveer Tagger.
This podcast is sponsored by Marcon, a local family-owned and managed real estate development and construction company that's been around for nearly four decades. Marcon is not only committed to high-quality construction, but it also is making a positive impact in the communities in which it builds, all across the Lower Mainland.
We want to highlight two incredible Marcon projects. Elmwood, a 38-story tower located at Burquitlam's most important intersection, Como Lake Avenue and Clark Road. This landmark tower will feature 335 condominiums. over 37,000 square feet of office and retail space, and almost 20,000 square feet of amenity space. Elmwood has been incredibly popular with 80% sold currently, but they still have a great selection of junior one-bedroom all the way to three-bedroom homes remaining. Check out marcon.ca/elmwood for more.
And Matt, we are also excited about Soane House, Marcon's newest community in West Coquitlam, with 165 homes ranging from junior one beds to three beds. Soane House offers the perfect West Coast aesthetic with a more nuanced Nordic-inspired design. Register today at marcon.ca/soanehouse. That's S-O-E-N-H-A-U-S. Or you can learn more at marcon.ca or follow them at Instagram at Marcon Homes.
Marcon, building for life.
Okay, we're here with Manveer Tagger. He is the project manager and partner at Common Ground Consulting. How you doing, Manveer?
I'm good. How are you guys doing?
Yeah, good, good. Thanks for coming down to the studio.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Can you maybe start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, for sure. My name is Manveer Tagger. I'm one of the co-founders and partners at Common Ground Consulting. Common Ground Consulting is a project management and development consulting firm based in the Lower Mainland in Metro Vancouver. What we do, or the gist of what we do, is we act on behalf of developers and landowners all over BC, and from feasibility and due diligence analysis all the way through to the whole building permit process, we handle all the sub-consultants and kind of manage a project. My background's in civil engineering. So I went to post-secondary at BCIT. I did my civil engineering there, and then I worked at McIlhenny and Centris Engineering, which is a firm out in Surrey as well. While I was there, I was working strictly in the land development division and you know, working on servicing designs and grading plans and subdivisions and townhouse projects and industrial projects. So while doing that, I kind of knew I was interested in this industry and saw an opportunity where along with my partner, who's also a civil engineer, but we both saw an opportunity here where we can add value for developers. And there were some things that we were seeing weren't being done as efficiently as maybe they could. So we saw the need for it and we jumped on it and started this company.
Right. And why real estate?
So to be honest, my family background's always been in construction development. My parents immigrated here early 1990s and took up, obviously, you know, typical immigrant story of, you know, working whatever job you can get back then, and found himself doing construction. He was a framer. So he eventually started his own framing company and then slowly started building homes and then slowly started doing subdivisions and townhouse projects. So, you know, seeing that from a young age and kind of always had that idea in my head.
So your dad is a developer.
Yeah.
Interesting. So why it's curious, because you know, one of the sort of obvious routes would be to join the family business, mm-hmm. And presumably you help out. But
yeah.
What made you go the civil engineering route?
Well, it's a good question. I think there's a lot of things that kind of added up to or resulted in that happening. One of the things being, you know, when in high school summers, I would, you know, work as a framer with my dad and his company. And I quickly knew that I wasn't built for it.
Yeah.
It's really, really hard work. So I was like, well, you know, I better go to school, right? So,
yeah.
And I was always kind of thinking from a young age of, you know, how can I really forge my own path in this industry and kind of add value where I can and learn and you know, do all these things. So I was always kind of looking towards engineering as something that I'd be good at. So that's kind of why I decided to go in that route. And once I did that, and I really loved what I was doing, but there was another part of me that wanted to do something and build something new that was fresh and, you know, could add value for developers, landowners, everyone. Right.
Right.
And I'm just thinking, because like in line with that, you were with two successful engineering companies mm-hmm. and then you decide to go out on your own. Mm-hmm. So can you talk about that? Like, was that a similar desire to kind of build something on your own?
Yeah, I guess so. I think, you know, that experience was really, really valuable for me. I mean, one, you know, working with McElhaney, which is a bigger company, I kind of got to see how they operate and their corporate structure and all that, and work with some really good people there. And then at Centris, when I first started there, it was a smaller company. You know, working with a smaller company, you kind of get to do everything and a mm-hmm. little bit of this and a little bit of that. So that experience was very valuable for me too, and learning kind of how a business is run and what to do and things that come up, right? But I honestly, doing the engineering work, I just didn't feel like I was fulfilled. I enjoyed it. I liked it, but I just couldn't see myself doing it for the rest of my life. And, you know, this idea, the Common Ground Consulting idea, kind of popped into our head then. And I thought it's something that really excited me, and it excites me to this day, and I love doing it. So that's kind of why.
And so Common Ground started, like, how, what year?
Formally under this name, early 2022.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm kind of curious, yeah. Like, can you walk us through the kind of gap in the market you saw? Like, was it that there was, you know, the other firms are not involved in what you're doing? Or
yeah.
just walk us through that kind of identifying yeah. the gap and why it exists and how you fill it?
Yeah, I just felt like, you know, with a lot of our engineering clients, you know, whether they were construction guys who, you know, had picked up sites, but their specialty was building the site, to somebody who was just an investor, to somebody who was a developer that did it all, I still saw a lot of, you know, inefficiencies, like I mentioned, where I just thought, like, there has to be a better way to do this. I mean, and, you know, with today's conditions, like, time is more valuable than ever.
Right.
So I thought that, you know, everyone should kind of focus on what they're good at. Like, if you're a construction person, focus on the construction, right? If you're an investor, just focus on investing. Right?
Focus on providing the cash.
Exactly. It's not easy to do.
No, no.
So that's kind of how that idea started. And then, you know, just having that engineering lens, I can say, on the whole development process really got me thinking, and then how it should all be broken down and certain ways to do things and who is the best at, you know, doing what for other consultants and, you know, those relationships that I had. So that whole kind of cocktail mixed together, I saw that there wasn't really anyone else offering that service. And it was a service that not only I saw, but a lot of our clients were, you know, approaching me and saying, hey, like, why don't you just take care of everything for me? Like, I don't want to deal with 10 different consultants. I don't want to deal with the city. And I got better things to do with my time rather than sit there and follow up on emails or reply to this person or that person, right? So all that put together kind of, you know, planted that idea in my head. And then it was just a matter of building a business plan and building a system that caters to it and that really executes on it. You know, my background's in engineering. I'm not a good salesman or anything like that. Or even, I don't even consider myself, honestly, a good business development person. But my thing is that just figure out how to add value. If you can prove that you can add value and you are adding value, then that's all really that matters, right?
So it's when I think about, like, how many moving parts there are in development, you know, there's the knowledge to actually, like, how do we get this from soup to nuts, you know, kind of where the origin of like, buying a parcel of land and then developing it all to the end.
Yeah.
The knowledge there of getting it built. But then there's also this whole, the systems approach of getting it done in a really efficient manner.
Yeah.
Where you're constantly tweaking so that, and presumably you're saving a lot of time for people.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're confident that, you know, for most of our projects, I mean, obviously depending on the scope and what kind of permits are needed, but we're pretty confident that projects that we do versus some that are owner led, we can save them 4 to 6 months right off the bat, which is huge. Right?
Wow.
So, you know, with the way we operate too, is it's that same kind of value add I'm going back to, where it's like, okay, you bring us onto the team. If we save you 4 to 6 months of interest payments, it's kind of a good deal, right? So
no kidding.
Yeah.
And Manveer, how many people at Common Ground right now?
4.
Okay. So I'm just curious, because the process you're helping people walk through is complicated. Mm-hmm. Going out on your own is complicated. Yeah. I love the kind of simplified, we just need to find out how to add value. Like, that's like the crux, right?
Yeah.
But building those systems to ensure that you're doing that is complicated. Yeah. There's a lot of moving parts to the business. Yeah. I'm just, out of pure interest sake, like, what's been the biggest challenge so far in Common Ground's journey?
I think the biggest challenge is really figuring out, like, for one, the processes, like our internal softwares that we use, our templates, our systems that we have set up. That's always a dynamic kind of thing, and it's an iterative process. So we're always kind of tweaking it as we go and saying, okay, well, how could we have done this better? Or what came up here that didn't come up there?
Right.
I think part of the challenge that comes with it is, each project is so different. Even if it's like 20 townhomes here and 20 townhomes here, there's still so many differences between them. And each client is different in terms of what they want to build and how they want to build. So,
and then you're working with different municipalities.
Different municipalities, like, different consultants. So it gets, because in its iterative process, it just keeps getting better with time. But, you know, I think it's the only thing you can do is commit to that constant improvement.
Right.
But what we like to do with all of our projects is, you know, the earlier the better for everything. So figuring out what the owner's goals are with it, figuring out exactly what our roadblocks are to getting there, figuring out how are we going to market this unit at the end, these units, who's our target, what's our budget, where's the contingency, where's the risk. And in terms of the municipalities, you know, we've gone to a point now where we have good, strong, professional working relationships with most of the planners and you know, decision makers at these municipalities. So, mm-hmm. you know, obviously fostering those relationships and even with the sub-consultants, you know, we know who is probably best for what job.
Right.
We like getting involved early because, you know, for example, one of the first things we do is we'll send out RFPs for all the consultants and we'll review 4 or 5 quotes for each thing and we'll say, okay, you know, this price is here, but what has this guy included and what has this guy included and what have they done and, you know, what's their current turnaround time looking like for their projects? You know, we're working with them on this site and this is how that's going.
So right.
kind of passing that value on to our clients, right? And we do have some clients that are quotation bigger developers, but, you know, the other thing is right now we have, I think last I checked, 27 active jobs on the go. So, you know, under our umbrella, each of our clients are maybe the smaller and medium-sized developers, they kind of get treated like a bigger developer, right? Mm-hmm. Because when we're dealing with these architects or dealing with the city, they're dealing with us, right? So it's just kind of gets pushed into one.
Right.
So all those added values that a bigger developer might see that a smaller medium might not, we pass that value on.
And do you, like, just to kind of, for someone at home who's thinking like, okay, like what type of asset classes, like, mm-hmm. can you talk about, first of all, what type of projects are you working on? And then also, like, how small of a project is too small to take on?
No project's too small.
Okay. But like, just to, like, hypothetically, somebody has, you know, the new zoning comes in, you want to develop a 4-plex.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, is that too small?
Yeah. No, I understand the question. No, like, so.
I thought you were going to go.
Hold on, let me break it down further.
No, I was just kidding. I was just teasing you. But yeah, I mean, we kind of have like the whole spectrum. I mean, our smallest job right now is like a 2-lot subdivision, single family, and all the way up to apartment buildings with 500 units. Everything in between,
wow.
mixed use, commercial, rental. There's a lot of work we do that involves the MOTI, that involves the Ministry of Environment, TransLink, that kind of stuff. So we like to kind of keep our net open. Mm-hmm. And you know, depending on each project, as long as it makes sense for the owner and for us, we'll take it on and then see where we can help.
Are you doing any government contracts or is it all for private?
Yeah, we're getting into that. There's some that I can't really speak about now that are just at the finish line, but not exactly there.
Okay.
But we're doing some work for like Canada Post and yeah, getting into that space as well. But it's a different space, right? So it's trying to balance that. I think our bread and butter is the private guys. And I think part of that comes down to going back to your question earlier about the gap that we saw is there isn't, or at least that we saw, somebody in the consulting space that really understood the private developer and what their concerns were and what their needs were. So that's kind of what we're tailored for is those private developers and helping them out.
Mm-hmm.
But we are getting into the public space as well.
How is your opinion of like what you thought you would be doing when you started the company versus what you're doing and where you're seeing yourself adding value changed over the last few years?
Wow, that's a good question. Yeah, I think there's just so much more to it than meets the surface. I think a lot of times, whether it be general public or the media or whatever, we just see, land developer builds a building, sells it, and moves on. But there's just so many moving parts, and it's an organization that the developer is running, right? It's a company, it's a business, it's people that work there, it's people that depend on it, right? So I think working through the process with different developers versus from when I started from just an engineering lens, you really get to understand all of the complexities that come with it and all the moving parts and everything, right? So to answer your question, I think that I understand now, I sympathize even with developers a lot more than I did when I was an engineer or practicing as an engineer. And I think part of our business and that iterative process of always trying to improve is managing all of those complexities. So not just the bottom line of, your selling price, not just how long did it take you to get a permit, but more so, okay, what does this project mean to your brand? What are we trying to leave? What kind of impression are we trying to leave here? You know, what's our 5-year, 10-year goal, right? And we've been lucky now to work with some awesome developers, especially in Surrey and Langley, who, are family-owned companies, and we've done multiple projects with them now. So we kind of feel part of their company now. We have that kind of, attachment to it where it's like we want to produce something that's good and delivers to the community and helps everyone grow.
How's the market in your mind right now? Like, I'm kind of curious to hear about your take on the real estate market from your kind of unique vantage point.
Yeah, like we were talking about earlier, there's kind of two sides that I personally use to gauge where things are at based on our work. One is the feasibility and due diligence studies that we provide for people. So, they might tie up a site and have a due diligence period and want to do their homework on it. So we'll come on and we'll start investigating it. When that's really busy, that tells me there's a lot of transactions happening or people are looking to make moves. The other side is the permitting process, which I guess now thinking about it can be breaking down into two further things. So the permitting process is there's times like last year, for sure, we saw a lot of, hey, let's get this project to third reading and PLA because my bank needs it, right? Not so much, hey, let's...
Yeah, we got to get this to market.
We're going to build it, right? So that tells you something, right? Where it's, and we saw a lot of that last year where now if you're some of those guys who did, get their third readings and PLAs and rezonings and whatnot, they might have wanted to sit back and say, let's hit pause. Let's see how the next 6 months go. Let's see how the next 12 months go. We saw a bit of that too. So that tells you, where things are at with some of the bigger developers in the industry versus if guys are saying, hey, start to finish, we need this done ASAP. We want to break ground by this date and we're ready, right? Mm-hmm. That shows more optimism on where things are at and what they expect, right? So that's kind of the two sides of it that we see. Right now, I'd say first quarter of this year, we've seen a lot more optimism from our clients, but the tangible change just isn't there yet, in my opinion. Like the people are saying, coming to us more saying, hey, I'm looking at this site or I'm looking at that site, or hey, I want to start building this next year. But the actual work and the actual execution of those deals and moving the process forward in an aggressive manner just isn't there, I think. And I think, you know, when this cycle kind of started, me personally, I always thought, oh, you know, 2022, let's say it started. I thought, oh, by 2024, we should be turning the corner.
Out of the woods, yeah.
Right. But I think every year that goes by, everyone's like, oh, maybe it'll take a little bit longer, right? So I'm not pessimistic about it. I think it's still a great spot to be in, a great industry to be in. And I think it's going to definitely ramp up in the future here. But I just don't think today we're there. And I think that it's going to be a longer turnaround time than I think most people expected.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
This podcast is sponsored by Common Ground Consulting.
Are you developing in the Lower Mainland? Common Ground Consulting is a development management and consulting company with experience in single family, townhouses, multifamily, and commercial developments.
What I love about Common Ground, Adam, is they manage the whole development process, from due diligence and feasibility reports for initial purchase of land to completing rezoning, development permits, and building permits.
They streamline the whole process with strong relationships with sub-consultants and municipalities and a deep understanding of all city requirements.
Common Ground Consulting. Feasibility and efficiency prioritized every step of the way.
Learn more at commonground-consulting.com or 604-807-6419.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
Has the blanket rezoning changes had an impact on your business or who's reaching out?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and a lot of, honestly, confusion, because even dealing with different cities have these plans set up. They have these neighborhood plans that are accounting for X amount of people and X amount of schools and infrastructure. Now, those take 3-4 years to build and get approved, right? It's quite the process and it's a lot of work that the planners do there. Whereas now, you know, we throw this into the mix and it's like, okay, well, how does this affect what we already had? And, you know, some of our active applications as well, we're in this sort of limbo where even the cities don't know yet what they can ask us for. And I don't know if we want to kind of date this conversation we're having, but by the end of June 2024, they should, right? But the last couple months have been very interesting because, you know, for example, we've had one project in Surrey that was outside of the neighborhood plan area where they were doing the transit-oriented kind of development along Fraser Highway. You know, we were working with the developer and we kind of talked to the city and we said, hey, like, you know, we think that this property should be included and this is why it makes sense and whatever. So it ended up being included. Now we've made plans and submitted for comments based on that. But then the ministry comes in and says, well, actually, you could do this too. And so we're like, okay, we'll do that too. Great. Right. Awesome. Right? And then now you're asking the city planners to give comments on something that they didn't necessarily plan. So right. It puts them in
right.
quite the tough spot as well. So it's been interesting. And, you know, I applaud a lot of the planners for the way they've been trying to implement it. I mean, imagine working on something for 4 years and then it all changes, right?
Yeah. Well, this is the first time I think we've talked about this, but the people that had permits in process that now I'm assuming that a lot of people have absorbed a ton of costs and are now pivoting or trying to change,
for sure.
See what else they can do. And maybe it's more profitable, but also maybe you're out of pocket for design and a bunch of things, right?
Yeah, it's part of that, you know, kind of exercise you have to do is it even worth it, right? And I think that part of the challenge is that for the last, since the announcements were made, there's just more questions than answers. And you can't really expect anyone to have answers just yet. So put a lot of people in a funny place where, should I stay or should I go type of thing, right?
Right.
So we've been working with the municipalities on that, on a lot of our projects, to be honest. And even with not only the transit stuff, but even with the single family stuff, someone who's doing a 27 lot subdivision, they might be thinking, well, how does this affect me, right? What does this change for me? And so, I mean, you saw like in the township of Langley, they just rescinded all the third readings. They said, okay, well, everyone come back to the drawing board, right? I had a contact of mine. He had fourth reading, final adoption, legal documents, everything ready at the township of Langley. And then this came up and I was like, okay, well, now what do we do, right? So I think once everything's figured out, it will be good. But I think the part of the challenge that the ministry's been dealing with, city's been dealing with, we've been dealing with, developers been dealing with, everyone's had to deal with this, is kind of dealing with those unknowns and planning based on something that you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we've even had people come to us and say, well, you know, obviously it'd be better if I do a quadplex instead of a single family home. And, you know, our answer is, well, not necessarily. I mean, if the city's engineering services plan has accounted for, you know, let's say it's 10 lots, right? They've accounted for 40 people in this subdivision. Now you're telling them it's 160.
Right.
Well, where's the school? Where's the police presence, right? Where's the fire protection? Where's the parking, right? All these things, right? So what if they, you know, one possible thing is, you know, to address these very valid concerns, the city could say, okay, well, we're going to collect a fee, right? An added fee on, let's call it like an infrastructure fee or a additional density fee, whatever you want to call it, right?
Right.
That needs to be worked into your performa too, right? Or what's the code it's going to be built to? Are you going to have like four firewalls in your house, right? Is it going to be a rental requirement, an affordable rental requirement secured by, you know, housing agreement? Is it going to require all sorts of things, right? So I don't think it's definitely not as simple of an answer as I think a lot of people expected it to be.
Right. And then throw in the market too.
Yeah.
Like what does the market actually want?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's a huge thing, right? Because it's like, okay, well, if you're figuring out what is this going to sell for? There's no really comparison.
There. Yeah.
Personally, me speaking, I think I want to live in an apartment where I have my own parking and my own amenities. And it's kind of planned for that rather than a one suite out of four in a home, right?
It's kind of interesting. Like we've talked a little bit on the show about like early laneway homes just being like, you're like, man, these are garbage. And for a lot of them are garbage. And then it's like over
design wise,
the design has really gotten a lot better. But you're like, I wonder what the early, you know, like if your early days on these four or sixplex or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like presumably 15 years from now, they're going to have it sorted in a way that they don't now.
Yeah. Yeah. Or the other example is like, you know, these fourplexes where say they're each 1,000 square feet each. What we're seeing a demand for right now is like larger duplexes, half duplexes where people have like 2,000 square feet and they don't actually want suites.
No.
Right. Like they want the space and they want new construction. And so how many developers are going to build the, you know, the half duplexes now that they can maybe build 4 units or 6 units, depending. So it's kind of like there's lots of unanswered questions in terms of the product type that will be created.
But it is interesting to think like if you're an 800 square foot back unit on a single family lot, like, maybe a condo is actually the better option for a lot of people.
Exactly. So it's like, what's it going to sell for? And, you know, we're in the city of Surrey, we're part of the Development Advisory Committee. And what that committee is we work with the city of Surrey and their planners and their designers to kind of brainstorm and kind of just talk about these changes and plan to see how it's going to affect everything. And they've done a really good job, I got to say, on floating out certain ideas and getting professional input on some of the things. So, I mean, they're taking into account, okay, well, how many lots do we have that are going to be changed by this? You know, what is a design going to look like? A cookie cutter design on a square lot, on a rectangle lot, on a cul-de-sac lot,
yeah,
all those things, right? So they're doing the best they can. But I think just with the, anytime you have sweeping changes like this, it's a bit of growing pains, right? You're going to see.
As a civil engineer, is the Lower Mainland ready for this kind of density in terms of the infrastructure that supports our current housing? And I mean, that's a, maybe a tough, because I mean, I guess it's municipality based, like every municipality is different, but you know, I mean, we've definitely had people on this show say that certain municipalities are, the infrastructure is just not there to support it.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, I think that's a very good point. Like, you know, I've always, you know, with my partner or other people in the industry, we always talk about there's a lot of land in the Fraser Valley that's dedicated for development or designated for development. Where I think some of the supply issues come in is the infrastructure. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, in Surrey, just mentioning one area off the top of my head, West Clayton, right? West Clayton's plan's been out for years and developers have bought up in there in years and they have third readings and rezonings in place for years, but it's just a matter of the infrastructure. Once that first domino falls, you're going to see a lot of units and projects coming there. Same thing with South Surrey, Darts Hill, Redwood Heights. Those areas are designated for development, bought up, ready to go. People are waiting to start their projects there, but it's just infrastructure.
But so, and can, for somebody listening that, that doesn't understand, like waiting for the infrastructure, so is that like you're waiting, spell that out. What exactly does first domino look like?
Well, first thing is being your drainage, sanitary, and your water,
right?
So for some areas, it's like, okay, well, typically a development's responsible for their frontage, right? So you got to build out your frontage. Your neighbor's going to build out his. If you build out his, he'll pay you for it later once he develops, right? Obviously, it's subject to certain things, but generally, right? What the problem is if, let's say us three are three different properties here and the pond's going to go here at the corner of this table and you're on the upstream end of it and you're saying, okay, well, I'm ready to go. The engineering department's going to ask you, well, where are you draining to, right? We need a pond down here and then we need the services to be pulled up all the way towards your site. For most sites, that's going to kill your project. You can't absorb that kind of cost.
Right.
So what usually happens is some of the bigger developers, they bring the infrastructure and that's how it's typically happened, where they'll build the pond, they'll dedicate the land for the pond, they'll build the trunk sewers, and then they'll just do something called a developer works agreement where they'll be reimbursed for it later depending on how much area you have, how much land is flowing towards that pond and that sort of thing. But in conditions like today, who is
going putting to, up the capital and
And so you have even more properties that are locked from development because they're just the infrastructure is not there. So I guess circling back to your original question, in terms of added density, I think the Fraser Valley from a social, economical, and cultural standpoint is ready for it. But I don't think infrastructure is something I'd be worried about. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm curious because, Manveer, you were born and raised in Surrey. We've been criticized on this show as being Vancouver-centric in our comments on maybe the Valley in general, like sometimes bewildered or looking at certain what projects sell for, $1,100 a foot, $1,150 a foot. Can you talk about your, like watching Surrey change, but then also, or the Valley change, I guess, but then also, do you think about it as being an extension of Vancouver and the Lower Mainland, or do you see Surrey as something in its own light now? Like,
I think the Fraser Valley, Vancouver is a global city, right? So I think the Fraser Valley and the area surrounding it will always kind of be an extension of it. But you're starting to see, at least in my opinion, these cities and, you know, surrounding areas really start to establish their own identity and presence. And, you know, I think 20 years ago, if you thought of Surrey as now versus 20 years ago, I think you think of Surrey less of an extension of Vancouver. And I think it's growing into its own kind of metropolitan place. Same thing with Langley. I love Langley.
Yeah.
I think it's a great place. You're seeing a lot of young families there and, you know, there's a lot of new projects. It's starting to get this sort of sense of real community and identity there. And you're seeing that all over, right? All over the Fraser Valley. So I think you're right. I think, you know, this is Metro Vancouver, and it'll always be that way, just with the city that Vancouver is. I mean, driving here today, on a day like today, you can't beat it. Like, it's just a beautiful place, right? But I think the areas surrounding it are also starting to, I guess, stake their place and really get an identity and kind of grow into their own kind of hubs.
And if you, like, thinking about areas you're excited about in the Fraser Valley, is Langley kind of it in terms of from an investment perspective or,
yeah,
or a future?
I guess it depends. I'm a little, depends on the area, depends on what kind of my goals would be. Listening to your podcast, I know the niece question.
It's coming. It's coming. Matt's drafting it as we speak.
I'm writing it out. You have a niece. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I think, I don't know. For me, I'd ask my niece, like, well, are you going to live here? Or are you just, is this on the side? Or how long are you going to live here? I think all those things matter. But I think Metro Van as a whole, obviously we'll have our ups and downs, but I'm positive on the whole area. I mean, I think Vancouver all the way to even Chilliwack, I think in the next 10 years, it's just going to see more and more growth. So I don't think you could really go wrong.
You know, one thing I'm thinking from your kind of vantage point is where the opportunities are and where the demand is from the vantage point of the people that are building the housing, mm-hmm. you know, for 3 years from now, for 5 years mm-hmm. from now. Like, are there certain areas where you're like, oh man, there's a lot of talk about X area or Y area where there's a lot of like early stages, this looks exciting from a development perspective. And what kind of housing is that? Like, presumably out in Langley, Surrey, it's townhomes are it, but.
Or maybe smaller multifamily, although Langley's kind of changing.
Yeah, so that's the other thing. I think, you know, going back to how the landscape's changing in some of these cities, growing up, you didn't see a lot of apartment developments that weren't like in the hub of the city or in the downtown of the city. Now you're seeing a lot more of that. And I think municipalities have kind of changed their stance on it, where I think some of the previous, you know, stance on it was apartments and mixed use should only be where the town center is and mm-hmm. where the transit is. And there's still some of that, but I think it's kind of grown to a point now where people are understanding that, okay, if this is going to be a big city, there's going to be a lot of more people that need an apartment rather than a townhouse, or that can only afford an apartment rather than a townhouse. With that being said, a lot of the newer plans do account for that. A lot of, like, for example, in the township of Langley, they are kind of pro-density. The current mayor and council, they are really pro-density. And as long as you're satisfying, you know, all of the concerns they might have or design considerations and infrastructure considerations, that they're open to seeing more density. But I do think there's also that always going to be that suburban feel that's desired in these places, mm-hmm. which is why I think townhouse product and duplex product is really valuable in these spots. And it's hard to come by these days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so Manveer, maybe as a final question, I know you kind of talked a little bit about kind of the false start in the market, like mm-hmm. how we've, you know, in 2022, you thought, well, by the time we hit, you know, 2024, we're going to be rocking by now.
which
go back to listen to our episodes for the past 2 years and you'll hear a lot of that. But it is kind of this idea that it does feel like the market, you feel like it's starting, then it's stagnant, feels like it's starting. But any thoughts on the balance of 2024 and maybe is 2025 that year?
Well, I hope so.
It's actually, just before you answer, it's like you've kind of, Common Ground was started in a great moment though, right?
Yeah.
Because it, like, you've kind of set the framework for like the next run.
Yeah.
Where you'll be.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, with the balance of this year, we are starting to see people dust off the wheels and start to get things going again and start to look again. And I think a lot of it is everyone's expectations have kind of recalibrated to where they need to be. I think last year what you saw was a lot of people who were looking for stuff were in line with the market, but people who were looking to sell weren't.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just human nature. Like, you know, 2 years ago, they were getting offers for X amount and now it's 15-20% below that, and they're like kind of like,
it is what
it
is.
The heck, right? Yeah. So I think that process, that psychological process as a whole, has mostly run its course, and I feel like everyone's pretty understanding of where things are at today. I think obviously it comes down to the interest rates, right? And I think, you know, even if they bump it down by, let's say, 25 basis points, it's not going to make the world of a difference on your pro forma. But just mentally, for a lot of people, I think it's especially in Surrey and Langley, it's going to start making a difference in how aggressively they start to look and how they start to plan for the next 5 to 10 years.
Mm-hmm. It's funny, but we've talked about this recently about Vancouver being an emotional market.
Yeah.
And I feel like that there's like, it's a lot of people say, well, you know, 25 bips, like what's that going to actually do? But in reality, it's a signal that it will be hard to ignore if you're a buyer who's been sitting on the sidelines.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, I think to kind of agree with you, I think Metrovan as a whole, it's, this industry is emotional in some senses. And I think once they see that, you know, we always laugh that my partner and I about, if you ask a certain group of developers where the best area in Surrey Langley is to develop, you can figure out who their friends are just by the answer they give you. You know, you got your Langley guys, your Willoughby guys, you got your South Surrey guys, you got your Annandale guys, right? So it's funny. There's always that dynamic.
That's such an interesting point.
Yeah.
You can't, no matter how much, you kind of can't take the emotion out of the out of real estate.
No, it's no human
matter
nature, how, right?
Even if it's your straight numbers.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating. You know, I was just going to say, in terms of recalibration, I was talking to somebody yesterday who's asking about this kind of inventory spike. And I think that's exactly what I was trying to explain to this person was, I feel like there's been, you know, supply sitting on the sidelines, mm-hmm. waiting last year.
Yeah.
It was like, we're now at this kind of, there's a new normal.
Yeah.
And it feels like it's normal.
Yeah.
And last year it didn't feel like it's normal. And people are like, all right, let's roll. Mm-hmm. And then you see, you know, a huge spike in inventory because everybody's like, I was waiting for it to go back to 2% and that's just not going to happen. So
yeah.
Anyway.
I can definitely see that.
And Veer, we have this segment called the Five Wire, Five Lighthearted Questions that we end every show with. Can you stick around for that?
For sure, yeah.
Okay, so question number one is one book recommendation for our listeners.
Book recommendation. I think I'd say Meditations by Marcus Aurelius.
Wow. That's a new one, right?
Yeah, I think it's gained popularity, I think, recently.
No, yeah, but it's very
old. Yeah. I didn't hear about it till like I didn't hear about it till recently. So I think it's kind of that whole kind of branch of thinking has gained some traction lately.
But yeah.
And you've seen Gladiator, so you're good.
Yeah. No, yeah,
he's really Australian, right?
Yeah. I really like that book. I think it's important to kind of understand what you can control and what you can't control, especially in our industry, right?
So yeah.
Kind of focusing on what you can control and what's going on in your head, and the external events are the external events, right? And
they're
going to keep happening, good or bad.
Yeah, that's interesting. We've talked a lot about that with, I mean, obviously in the market, like in our industry for sure. It's like you control the things that you can control and everything else is just what it is.
Yeah.
Right?
It's just chaos. Just
how you react to chaos, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
What is one new habit or belief that has impacted your life over the last couple of years?
Wow.
Especially building a business, I guess.
Yeah. New habit or belief. Yeah, I guess the belief that, you know, you got to make sure, again, coming back to this industry, and I'm sure you guys deal with this too, and anyone who's starting a business really is, or any ambitious person, is to not delay your happiness, right? I think we get caught up a lot in, especially in this industry, of the next thing, or here's my next goal, or here's what I want to accomplish. But, and then the mistake some people make, I think, is they think that relates to how happy they are. And I think that's not true.
Mm-hmm.
I think you got to find, obviously have those goals and ambitions. You have to, right? You have to have something to aim for next. And then as soon as you have that, you should aim for something else, right? But I think you should really fall in love and find a balance where you're enjoying the ride and you're enjoying the journey. And that's something that I've kind of adopted, and I obviously have my goals, and I want to be to the next spot, and then the next spot, and the next spot. It's just how we are as people, right? But I think kind of having that focus on enjoying the ride and being content with what you're doing day to day, and enjoying that, and finding happiness in that.
So basically, you gave up social media.
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't know. We think about that all the time, but that idea too is like the process of if when you get to the goal, it's, the happiness is not waiting there for you. Right? No. I mean, like that's the thing, right? You have to learn to enjoy the ride.
It's so hard to do too, right? Because it's just like you might not consciously think that. Oh, I don't think anyone consciously goes to sleep at night and says, "Oh, once I do this, I'll be happy." I don't think people think like that. But even subconsciously, it's more so you think that. Just because you're working towards something that's what you need to get to, and that's the prize. And that's great. But also finding a way to enjoy.
If your whole self-worth is tied up in that
goal, in something that's not really, the goalposts are always going to change for you, right? Like if you 5 years ago versus 10 years ago versus where you are now versus 5 years from now, 10 years from now, the goalposts are always changing. So there's no need to get too hung up on that.
Favorite music or band?
Music or band? For music, I think I'd have to say Drake, even though it's kind of a mainstream answer.
tough to be a Drake fan these days.
Yeah, a lot of stuff going on.
A lot of stuff going on.
But I don't know. I just think he's so versatile. He's got a song for everything, right?
Yeah.
And he's been doing it for so long. So listen a lot of him. To be honest, though, believe it or not, recently I've gotten into country a little bit.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Kendrick.
No. Yeah. Who are you? This is interesting because somebody just texted me about country this morning.
Yeah. So Morgan Wallen's a big one. I've been kind of listening
that
to.
Comes up on the
that
show.
That comes up on the show all the time.
That's a big development. I think what happened is one of my friends, he made a playlist, like a country music playlist. And I wasn't sure if he's... I've never even like really listened to country music. But I kind of started giving it a listen. And I was like, oh, some of this is pretty good, right?
Yeah.
So listening to a little bit of that now, it's nice.
Is this a male or a female, Morgan?
Morgan Wallen?
Yeah.
He's a male.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, you know who this person is?
I don't know any of their music, but I did know it was a
I think he's honestly probably the only artist I know. I know how the songs sound in the car, but I don't know the names of them.
Right? Oh, okay.
I just literally go to my friend's playlist and hit shuffle on
Right. Nice. Right on. Something you've been binge watching lately, favorite movie, recent movie?
I tried to watch it like years ago, but then I don't know what happened. I kind of just lost my place and gave up. But I've been watching Mad Men.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
What season are you almost through?
Season 5.
Oh, so you're into it. Okay.
Has the lawnmower in the office?
Yeah, that seems pretty funny. It's a pretty cool show. Just, I think, you know, they like sneak in kind of historical events too, and how people were reacting to them and just the conditions back then.
You know what? It's funny though. I feel like I shouldn't comment on suit style, but it's old enough now where you're like, oh yeah, that spurred on like a whole...
Yeah. Yeah.
Skinny ties, the whole thing that is now. Is that still a thing? I don't know. Maybe I'll ask you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think…
I'm not asking. I'm like, speak to skinny ties.
No, I think in terms of the show, I think it's just cool because it's not really a show where sometimes a whole lot is really happening. It's not like a lot of action or wars or anything that's going on. But it's just, there's certain things that kind of, for me personally, that are kind of thought-provoking. About how people reacted to certain things and certain dynamics in terms of even, you know, the professional world and personal world, right? Certain norms that people followed then that seem so weird now.
Yeah.
And then you start thinking about the norms now and, hey, maybe that might be kind of weird, right? So it's an interesting watch. I recommend it.
That's great. Last but not least, something under $1,500 that you've purchased recently that's had a positive impact on your life.
Under $1,500. Oh, I'd say golf lessons. Long overdue golf lessons.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I've also done that. It didn't work out.
I mean, it's kind of frustrating. It's like you're taking a step back, right?
You
take the lessons and get worse.
And then if you don't continue, like I started working on it and then fell off. And then you're like, I'm back to square one. But anyway, how How can people find out about Common Ground Consulting, more about what you guys are doing?
Yeah, they can reach out to me. They can go to our website, commonground-consulting.com. Reach out to us there. They can email me, my first name, Manveer, M-A-N-V-E-E-R, at commonground-consulting.com. And I'd say, you know, don't just reach out only if you're a developer or only if you have a project. If you have that, great, reach out. But anyone in the industry wants to grab a coffee, have a quick chat, even young people looking to maybe join our team or wanting to know more about kind of the opportunities there. We are trying to grow the team a bit this year. So yeah, basically anyone listening, feel free to reach out and touch base.
That's fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time, Manveer.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. It's fun.
Right on. So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Common Ground's Manveer Tagger.
Really enjoyed that conversation. Really enjoyed having Manveer in the studio. Really cool perspective and a super bright guy overall.
Really cool perspective. Two things. One, I think he said his family came in the 90s. His dad started a business. And it's just really cool to think, you know, in the last, I guess it's 30 years. It feels like it hasn't been 30 years since 1990, but 30 years, his dad's established a construction company that is doing well. And Manveer could have joined the team and he decided, I'm going out and starting something totally new. It's like, man,
he said that his physicality made that choice.
Right,
for him.
Right. he's a big guy. Wide shoulders. Yeah. I don't know if you noticed that.
I noticed, he was tall.
Very tall. No, but anyway, it's like that entrepreneurial spirit. I love to see it.
Yeah.
Also, he's not choosing sides, but Drake was his favorite.
His
favorite artist.
Yeah, we will agree to disagree on that one. But here's the thing. Inventory spikes alongside tax increases with Kevin Skipworth. Tons of feedback from that episode. Everybody loved that episode. Critical insights into Vancouver real estate with Ben Smith. I've got more texts about that episode just in terms of like the recommendations, the investment recommendations.
Yeah.
Got a lot of people reach out kind of substantiating what Ben has said. It's phenomenal to have. We've just had these great episodes. Of course, the David Hutniak from Landlord BC episode. Lots of people reaching out. Lots of people feeling like they're getting good value from the program. We love to hear from you. We love the support.
That's why we're starting a Patreon account. No,
yeah, we're not. Anyways, this is the thing. If you want to share the show with a friend, we really appreciate it. If you want to give us a rating, we're just going to keep moving forward. We're going to have these great episodes. And I think this Manveer one is going to get another.
It's another one for the Pantheon.
Yeah. The Patreon.
No.
Anyways, Matt, what else you got before the...
What else do we have? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the LiveWire. This is where we have VIP pre-sale access. We have stats, different types of stats before anyone else, sales ratios. There's no reason why you shouldn't be on the LiveWire. We also have, of course, private client services.
Yeah, Matt, if you're not using PCS, you are standing still where the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Sign up for your own free PCS account. We'll set it up for you. Really, there's no better way to look for real estate than there's no better time to be monitoring sales prices and new inventory.
It's, as Kevin said, inventory spikes. It's interesting. It's an interesting moment.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. For sure. And Matt, how can people get in touch with you?
They can get in touch at any time, 778-847-2854 or matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we have that Kokomo line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week. Go Canucks, go. And man, what a crazy first game that was. I couldn't, I was, my whole family had gone to bed, but like, it's kind of awkward cheering by yourself. Like when you're so like, I was like
screaming,
and jumping up and down. And then like looked around and I was like, man, I'm like high-fiving myself.
We split season tickets and we didn't get playoff tickets for whatever reason, a variety of reasons.
Yeah. I don't know if I'm regretting that or not.
Really? Well, I hadn't regretted it till last night. Could you imagine being there? Oh my God.
Well, I mean, it would be fantastic. But I think here's the one
maybe thing. Too loud. Maybe you know, too
it,
loud.
Wasn't there one moment where like they kept playing?
They couldn't hear the whistle.
They couldn't hear the whistle. Yeah. And you know, it's funny, but I was driving home from work to get home for the game and around 6 o'clock, downtown was off the charts. Yeah. Like there was people, there was like random street musicians and like bands playing along like West Georgia. A guy on a saxophone, like wailing, unrelated. Nothing to do with the Canucks. But here's the thing. There was a lot going on downtown. I was super fired up, but I was also like happy to get home and watch the game because it was almost like chaotic enough.
Oh, like, Like it could go sideways.
Not go sideways, but also it's just like, you know, you go to the game and then you're like, oh, should we go somewhere and grab a snack or something after? And then it's like super busy. Like I just bet the whole, there's a lot of people having a rough morning today at work.
I would guess as much. Anyway, yeah, you're right. Go Canucks go, and we'll see you next week.
Take care.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.